What a difference a couple of generations makes on our attitude towards vets, veterans. They were often treated horribly when they returned from the hated Vietnam War. Now people are always thanking vets for their service, regardless of how they feel about the wars. Vets get their moment in the spotlight in our region starting tonight as Southern Oregon Public Television, based in Medford, unveils a series called My Story of Service. Jeff LeBeau is the program producer for SOPTV, sitting here across the table from me. Old hand from back in the days when both worked at KDRV in Medford. Welcome, Jeff.
Thanks.
Good to have you here. Andy Draper's with us as well. He's a Navy veteran and a consulting producer to the program. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you.
Good to have you here today. And Jeff Tabler is an Army veteran, also one of the people interviewed in number 7 in the series. Welcome, Jeff.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
So let's start with Jeff LeBeau. What got the project started?
Well, about 7 years ago, when Ken Burns did the World War II, the war, SOPTV did some local interviews with some World War II veterans that I came across after I got started at SOPTV. And I thought, wow, these are really interesting. It turned out almost all of those fine gentlemen had passed. And I thought, boy, wouldn't it be interesting to talk to vets about their time in the service and not just limited to one war or one action, and then start looking for similarities. I was just interested in who are these men and women who answer the calls. You know that there's a smaller and smaller percentage of families that actually have vets in them.
With the all-volunteer Army today,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And there's becoming, it seems to be becoming a larger disconnect between the civilian world and the military world, and often the one doesn't understand what the other actually does.
So, Jeff Tabler, let me start with you then, among the vets, because were you a volunteer yourself, or were you drafted into the Army back in the Vietnam War?
No, I was absolutely doing nothing in my life. I decided to go in the Army with a friend, and we buddied up and went in the service.
And just because there was a lack of anything else to do?
Pretty much, yeah. I was just bumming around and not in school at the time, and so I decided, well, why not?
Andy Draper, what's your story? When did you serve in the Navy, and what made you decide to go volunteer for it?
I went in 81. I was in college at the time, but I needed some structure. I felt that I needed structure, and that was the reason that I went into the Navy. Just to try to make myself more disciplined to get to where I needed to go. I felt I was a little wild in that time in my life, and that was going to help me out a little bit.
Did it have the desired effect? Did it give you the sense of structure you needed?
It taught me a lot about the world and kind of opened my mind to new ideas, took me away from that little community that I was in and opened the world up to me. So I think that helped me out a lot.
So Jeff LeBeau, how did you go about finding people like Andy and like Jeff? Some of them you knew already, I guess. I think you've probably known Jeff for a long time.
Yeah, I've known Jeff for a long time, but actually I didn't even realize he was a vet. I've known him for years, but didn't even realize he was a vet. And I just ran into him and, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? I told him, and he said, I'm a vet. And I said, well, you got to come in. Andy is a volunteer at Southern Oregon Public Television. And I realized that he would be an asset. And he also is involved in a lot of the veteran service organizations in the area. So I asked him for some guidance, the best ways to approach veterans. Ended up talking with Punky's Breakfast. They have a Wednesday breakfast. All vets come. And they were nice enough to put me on the agenda, and I told them what I had in mind. And a lot of them signed up and just talking. And I'm actually hoping for season 2, we're going to have a lot more veterans coming in to talk with, especially female veterans. I'm really interested in talking with.
All right, so there is plans for a season 2 already.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I start pre-interviews early July.
Let's give a sense of what goes on in here, because we do have a couple of clips that we lifted off of some stuff you sent to us. So let's hear. Here's another person talking, as Andy did, about a guy looking for some structure in the military.
I was expecting to become a better man. I had a lot of disciplinary issues when I was younger, you know, and authoritarian issues. I would sooner rip your face off than have you look at me sideways. You know, and I knew I needed some structure in my life or I would be in jail. And I knew that I would have to go somewhere where they would make me have structure and help me control myself. And I think it worked.
So, Andy Draper, does that ring some bells for you?
Yeah, that kind of touches a couple of spots for me. Mm-hmm. I think at that age, when you're trying to accomplish something and it's not happening there, the military is one way to go.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the things that you were struggling with in your own life at the time that you you decided that that the Navy was the better place for you?
I think it was just trying to be more controlled about what I do. I was young, in my late teens, so everything is a go then. But I was seeing it get in the way, getting in trouble here and there, or not accomplishing some of the goals I wanted to accomplish because I wasn't disciplined enough to stick with it when other things got in the way. So I think the military helped me to find that discipline.
All right, we'll talk more with the veterans and with the producer of the program about them, called My Story of Service, starting tonight on Southern Oregon Public TV. Short break coming up on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll come back and take your phone calls. If you have your own story of service, we'd like to hear that as well. Join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the region, 800-838-3760, or jx@jeffnet.org via email. Back with Jeff and Andy in a minute 30. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today to folks involved with the project My Story of Service, a series of reports, over at Southern Oregon Public Television. Starting tonight, My Story of Service, 8 episodes profiling a number of veterans from around Southern Oregon and Northern California. And Jeff LeBeau is the program producer in the studio with me, along with Andy Draper, a Navy veteran and consulting producer, and Jeff Tabler, an Army veteran, who is also interviewed for the series. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions of either Jeff or the two veterans or stories of your own to share are more than welcome here at 800-838-3760 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. So we were talking about the motivations for Jeff and Andy and the reasons that they went into their respective services. In Andy's case, he was looking for some structure in his life. We had that buttressed by one of the clips we played from the series, which I guess is from number one.
And then
Jeff was talking about going off into the Army because he was looking for something to do. And you were saying off mic, Jeff LeBeau, that these are fairly common stories among the people you talk to.
Yeah. That, in fact, I was going through my memory here, and I think everyone was either, well, there's nothing better to do, I had to do something, or I need a structure in my life, or the last one was, I wanted to figure out a way to afford college.
So all of those things were the most logical things
early
to
on.
Get people on.
Yeah.
Jeff Tabler, just for you and for anybody else, my own memory comes back to 30-plus years ago and talking to people about the Vietnam War, and you're a Vietnam era vet, and it was still a very fresh memory for a lot of people back then. Hadn't even been 10 years, and I remember interviewing specifically one guy on Memorial Day in Green Bay, Wisconsin, who was kind of coming apart. He was not doing well because of what he'd gone through with, A, his experience in Vietnam, and B, his experience as a veteran trying to get back into society after the Vietnam War. What was your overall sense like, A, first from what you experienced while in the service, and then second, what you got when you got back home?
I went to Vietnam, and I worked with the people over there, and I saw how we treated them, and I didn't like it, because we treated them very poorly. The Vietnamese just didn't want us there. And so I experienced that whole feeling, despite the fact mortars are falling around us all the time. I didn't fight. I fought back when we were fired upon, but I was working with the 29th Civil Affairs Company, and we worked directly with the people through the Marines. Getting out, you just want to forget. And after kissing the ground and moving on, I drank a lot, to be honest, and I partied a lot. And I just wanted to forget and go on and get on with my life.
How old were you when you got out of the military?
22, 21.
All right, so still very young.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I turned 21 in Vietnam, of all places.
Wow. Do you remember your 21st birthday?
I do. I was on guard duty. Yeah.
The whole day?
No, most of the night.
Mm-hmm.
But I had an early morning scotch.
So how long did it take you to stabilize your life, would you say, once you're back over here?
It took a while. Mm-hmm. It took a while. You know, I finally decided to go back to college because before I was in before I went into service, I was in college and not doing well at all. Dropped out of one school, dropped out of another school, and that's, you know, I said, I got to do something. Didn't want to work for my father, so I took off and went in the Army. And I would say probably, after I was 25 or so, after I went through a drama school and I started going back to college again on the East Coast and started finding my way, what I wanted to do in life.
Yeah. And what did you end up doing for a career?
Well, there's a good question. I would say my career is now, I work with kids in theater. And I really enjoy it. Been doing it for the last 17, 18 years. And I did study in college film. And I also, I did some radio. And I went to a theater school in New York. So my life has been centered around film and theater.
Is it a good expressive outlet for you?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. Yeah.
Is it the kind of thing where you for you in particular, and I'll ask Andy in turn too, but I mean, do you wake up every morning with this memory of being a veteran or from your military service? Is that just a part of your life from long ago that might come up and might not in the course of a given day?
It's part of my life, but, you know, I don't wake up thinking that. But when I see something that involves a veteran, it brings back memories, you know, and I just nod my head and say, yeah, I know where you're coming from.
We have a clip from the series, too, and this is from another man who was stationed in Vietnam, and he talks about his first impressions of Saigon.
I remember my first visit to Saigon. It was pandemonium, all these people driving around on these little scooters, and, of course, being an American, you stood out. And the other thing that struck me was how vulnerable we were. I knew when I got there, and everybody knew, I think, that was in the military, this wasn't like World War II, where the Germans and the Americans had these big battles like the Battle of the Bulge. This was a guerrilla warfare type war we were involved in. What's to prevent a Viet Cong, undercover Viet Cong guerrilla, from throwing a hand grenade in a bar I'm sitting in, or maybe at a little vendor on the street buying something to eat.
That wasn't you, was it?
No. But we had a similar experience where I was stationed at the time by the DMZ. Like I said before, we work with the people. And we had with us a young interpreter, about 16 years old, a kid helping us out day after day. And he'd talk to the people around there, tell them what we're up to, what they need, ask them what they need, and we'd get it for them. And then one day he didn't show up. I said, oh, he's probably sick or visiting family, because they do that. They just take off. Well, a few days later, we finally realized, after talking to somebody, that he was captured. He was a spy for the North Vietnamese. I have no idea what happened to the kid. None. So, you know, who knows? Who knows? He may have been looking around the compound and saying, this is over here, this is over here, and this is over here, and this is, you know, aim for this.
You told me that during that time the mortar attacks were pretty accurate.
They're very accurate, yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's hard for anybody who is not a veteran to imagine that kind of life, and I bet this is, I don't know how you, did you do most of the interviews yourself,
Jeff
LeBeau?
Yeah, I did. And one of the things I thought was interesting was the parallels between the Afghanistan and Iraqi conflicts, wars, and Vietnam for that reason right there, not knowing and trusting the people. We have some stories about how Some of these vets really became so disillusioned when they discovered that the people that supposedly are on our side were plotting and working against them.
They were talking about the series called My Story of Service, airing starting tonight on Southern Oregon Public TV. What time, Jeff LeBeau?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock, okay.
After Antiques Roadshow.
Okay, and how long is each episode?
A half hour. Didn't want it to be any longer than that because, honestly, when you sit through these stories, at least for me, I kind of wanted to sit and live with them a little bit. When you just get one story after another story, it's almost emotionally overwhelming.
You did limit it to, it looks like, two people per episode, generally?
Yeah, and there's actually two episodes that actually have one that we just couldn't cut down. And in fact, I have some interviews in the can that their stories are so complex and there's so much I've yet to figure out how to edit these 2-3 hour interviews down to a 24 minute footprint.
Join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk to Jeff and Andy about the project and about their time in the military. And you can join us as well, 800-838-3760 around the region, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So, Andy Draper, where did you serve? I mean, we talked about the fact that you're in the Navy, but haven't established yet where and approximately when.
I went in the early 80s, 81. I was a sea sailor, so I commissioned Carl Vinson out of Newport News, Virginia, into Norfolk, Virginia. From there, we did a world cruise, ended up in Alameda, California. Took us about 11 months to do that. So it did let me see the world. I guess I've been on every continent except Antarctica. So the Navy, when they say see the world, they mean that.
Mm-hmm.
You're out to sea for long stretches, though. When I went in there, there wasn't that many females in the Navy. So a carrier carries about 6,000 people.
Mm-hmm. And they're all six. They're all men back then.
Correct.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when you're out to sea that long, there's a lot that can be going on. It's a lot of work. You don't get to say, I'm off. I'll be back tomorrow morning at 8. whenever you're needed, you're there. You can't go anywhere. You can't go, you know, up in the mountains or to the river. You're right there all the time. So from there, I went to a fast frigate, which is the smallest ship in the Navy. So I've been on the largest and the smallest ships in the Navy.
How many people on board a frigate?
A couple hundred people. So from 6,000 to a couple hundred, it's a big difference.
Yeah.
Carriers don't rock in storms. Frigates do. You might need to strap yourself in at night, depending on the weather.
Wow.
So it was a big change from one to the other.
That particular time in history, I mean, 1981, so I can think there was the Grenada invasion, there was the shuttling of Marines to Beirut, there was some stuff going on like that, but generally a fairly quiet period for the American military, wasn't it?
Right. It was peacetime, supposedly peacetime during that time. I think all the time the military is on alert, even when we're not at war, we're practicing. So it's a constant readiness in the military, regardless of where you're at in the military. I got out just before Desert Storm. Wish I'd have stayed in then. That was my first thought, that I should have been in, but I've been out about a year. So it was good. It was good when I was in there. We weren't at war officially with anybody, and I got to see the world. I was happy I went in.
Did you come close to anything like combat, or I mean, you probably had a lot of training exercises that simulated.
We were in some places that were kind of scary back then. We would go to some areas and go to general quarters. General quarters are always scary because you're not sure what's going to happen.
Is that what kids call battle station when they play games?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't know if I should talk about those places, so I won't.
That is not the first time I've heard that. Sometimes I'm talking to these vets, and all of a sudden they go, you know something? I'm not sure I can talk about this. They'll start to relive a moment in a conflict or something, and even now they feel like I've not gotten the go-ahead. I'm not sure I can communicate this.
Yeah, but it also is talking about they don't want to do that because it might affect them and their emotions, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Quite a bit. But the biggest problem I had with that was I did pre-interviews, and I think, wow, this is just this guy is great. This guy's fascinating. What a story. And we get lined up to do an interview, and the next day I get a call and say, I'm sorry, I can't. It just brought up too much. Yeah. I cannot do the interview.
Makes sense.
So hopefully they'll see the show and realize that they're in a totally safe place and that they're not going to get sandbagged, and they're willing to share their story.
How much time did you spend talking to the people? I mean, when did the process of putting the series, when did you commit to it being a series? And then once you got started, how long did the actual pre-production before editing work take?
August, I think, mm-hmm. is when Robert Mead, underwriting director at Southern Oregon Public Television, and I kind of said, let's do this. Let's figure out a way to make this happen. And we floated the idea with some underwriters, and the response has been amazing. This is the first time in Southern Oregon Public Television history, where all the funding for a program came from local sources. There's been no national grant or anything like that. There's just been this wonderful swell of these great underwriters. And then about 2-3 months to figure out how to get a hold of vets and approach the veterans, and Andy was a big help with that, and some really great vets, like I said, at Punky's and VetNet, and then pre-interviews on the phone for a month, and then early on, of course, anybody. I would talk to anybody, but I'm one of those people who believe that everybody actually has a story, and you just need to just sit down and listen. And then, like I said, the interview sessions would take 1 to 2 hours. It was a very kind of a relaxed interview in our studio, or went out to the Springs at Veranda Park and interviewed some of the World War II veterans who are living there. And mm-hmm. Hoping to do that in the future is to go out to these retirement centers, because a lot of these guys can no longer come to the station.
Sure. Curious, as we talk about the, you mentioned there are some World War II vets in here. You've certainly got Vietnam era people, mm-hmm. Iraq, Afghanistan. Anybody from Korea? Korea consistently seems to be like the forgotten war.
Yeah, we do have. I'm thinking. gosh darn it! I know. I spoke to some Korean veterans.
Okay, you can think about that. I got a question for Andy. Then tell us about the Punky's thing on Wednesday. What is Punky's?
Okay, that was something that Jeff has set up through Chris Brass. It's a meeting of veterans. They get together and just a camaraderie type thing. So that actually didn't come through me. It came through Chris, who has moved away from here. Mm-hmm.
The general trend, getting back to what I was talking about with Jeff earlier, I mean, where Vietnam veterans, particularly in the first few years after the war, were so reluctant to come out and even admit they'd been there. I mean, is that still an issue, Andy, in trying to get people to talk about the experience? Are there some guys who are just like, it's over, it's done, I'm not dealing with it, or I'm not going to talk about it anyway?
As far as people telling their story, I think the appeal of this and the reason that I got involved in it is because there was no pressure to sensationalize anything. It was a veteran just saying what he was comfortable and able to say. In that context, taking the pressure off, then I think people are more able to just be themselves, tell the story from their point of view. It makes for a better human story.
Which you got to hear all of, Jeff LeBeau.
Yeah.
How many people altogether? I mean, I was looking
20,
at
we spoke to, ended up speaking to 24 mm-hmm. total. And I think it's 14 total have made the show at this point. The others, it wasn't for lack of a story. Like I said, some of them are just so such a complex, long story that trying to figure out how to edit it and right. let them tell their story. Because I don't want to have myself be part of the story at all. It needs to be told by them.
You're
it's
trying to
a
lead your
social quest- history.
All right. You're trying to lead your questions out and all that
yeah,
sort of thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I'd like to think of it as a social historian.
Okay. We'll talk more about the production techniques and more about the stories of individual vets when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange with the people of My Story of Service starting tonight at 9 on Southern Oregon Public TV. Jeff LeBeau, Jeff Tabler, Andy Draper in the studio with us. You can join us on the Exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with our guests and you in a minute 25. Final segment of today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking to the folks involved with the series My Story of Service beginning tonight at 9 on Southern Oregon Public Television based in Medford. And I'll ask Jeff in just a moment if they'll be sharing it with other public TV outlets across the region. But Jeff LeBeau is the program producer. Andy Draper is a Navy veteran and consulting producer. Jeff Tabler is an Army veteran, and he's also been interviewed for the series. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Your own stories are welcome here at 800-838-3760 around the listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email, jx@jeffnet.org. You were talking about the storytelling approach. You're trying to just make this the story of the veterans. Andy was talking about it. It wasn't a pressure story. It was just a chance to just tell it, which is good. It's not like trying to do this on the commercial TV way to jam it into, you know, maybe 3 minutes if you get a lot of time from the producer for a series piece. So you really have the luxury of time here, but the storytelling, I imagine, could be tricky because you're talking more than what we have to do in radio, which is just provide the sound. You need the pictures there, too. And I don't know how well any of these guys might have documented their experiences in their branch of service.
Well, that's actually a really interesting point. I thought there would be more photo evidence and things like that. Majority of them didn't. A lot of guys don't seem to save this stuff. But we had some that had photos and other documentation of their time. But when we tried to incorporate that in the edit, the way we shot this was I was right below the camera lens. And so the vet is talking right essentially into the lens. And when you cut away to like a picture when they talk about, oh, this tank or something, I didn't think it worked. I find these guys, their faces so interesting. And the way that they present themselves, you really get to know them. And so it's a very, production value-wise, it's a very simple show. It's basically a talking head, but these guys are telling you their story. I always equate it to like a cocktail party or little tiny stories. You don't necessarily need to hear the whole story to get the gist of this incredible event or this funny event. Andy was talking about how seeing the world, that reminded me of Ed Hawkins, who told me about how he went around the world in 45 minutes. he was out there at the North Pole and hiked around 45 minutes. And he literally was on every continent. And that was not an uncommon thing to hear from these vets. One of the great positives of being in the service was they got to see the world.
Well, I heard that from Andy for sure. Jeff, I mean, how much of the world did you get to see? Was it just from here to Vietnam?
I went to a new part of the country for me, the South, and also went to Germany for a while. And from Germany, I went to Vietnam. Then I came back and ended up in Atlanta, Georgia, and that's where I was discharged.
In the South in the 60s, I'm guessing, right?
Right.
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 How big, how much of an eye-opener was that for you coming from? Where were you coming from?
Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and then I went to Fort Benning, Georgia.
In Columbus, Georgia,
yep.
where my in-laws actually met.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I had nothing to do with that, Jeff.
different era. So how big an eye-opener was that to live in a South that was still in the process of desegregating?
Well, I met a lot of new people from all around the states. It was great. A lot of our people came from, that I served with, came from Pennsylvania. A few from the South, but they came from elsewhere in the United States. So that was quite interesting.
And how about you, Andy Draper? I mean, in 1981, I mean, you're probably still some vestiges of discrimination around the country because obviously they still exist today. But, I mean, what did you have to put up with as you met people from other parts of the world, if anything?
There are barriers to overcome. I think we're so ingrained in some of the thinking that we have that as people move around and see different things, that there is some obstacles that you're going to have to overcome, some educating you're going to have to do to let people know that we're all really just the same people. As far as the discrimination and racism that happens in America, I guess my parents prepared me, but all the time when I think about it, I think about the struggles that they went through. My father served in World War II, Korea, and Vietnam.
Wow.
So he served in three wars. At one point, and this was during the time when civil rights was happening and we were trying to make a better world. And I was thinking, why are you over there when we are fighting over here? You know, the battle's really here where we need to make equality there and make people aware that everybody's human. But when I think later back on it, that's why he was there, to show that, yeah, we are all in this together. So I have to, he's my hero.
That's very, my dad was.
Yeah, very disciplinary, but very worldly in his mind. Open-minded about things. He knew what was happening everywhere, and I guess that's because he traveled a lot. He was Air Force, so we traveled a lot. And I know that we went through a lot of struggles in the Civil Rights era, and still that still happen today. Still go through things today, except I'm not angry like I was back then. I'm more of a, okay, we just need to educate some people. Mm-hmm. We need to know a little history.
The expectations, were there any from your father, given that he had been in the military as long as he was and had fought as much as he was? Did he put any pressure? I mean, you mentioned he's a disciplinarian, but mm-hmm. a good guy, too. Your hero. Did he place any expectations on you, like, this is what the men in our family do?
My father, my grandfather was a sharecropper. So my father pushed us to be educated. Go to school, educate yourself, and don't let what other people are doing deter you from that. There's going to be some struggles. You're going to have to be better, but you're going to have to earn the respect of people. You're not just going to get it, and sometimes you won't. So he just said, educate yourself, be educated, and be happy with your life. Nobody's better than you. Just be happy with your life.
Jeff Taylor, you said your father was your hero, too. Was he military as well?
He's in the Army, World War II, Africa, Northern Italy. But he didn't talk much about it. He's a very quiet person. He kept things to himself. A lot of World War II vets did that. And as I got older, he would give me some more information, but not a lot.
A lot of stiff upper lipness. I see you nodding your head there, Jeff LeBeau, that you encountered this with the World War II vets you talked to, or at least heard of it from them?
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, sometimes their wives would join them during the interview, and afterwards the wives would say, you know, I didn't know that. Hmm. I didn't hear that. I've never. But I don't think it's just the World War II vets that are reticent to talk. It seems like all veterans are. It's as one of them said, that unless you've been there, you just can't quite understand. There's a camaraderie amongst the brothers that serve. You know, these men and women have, when they take that oath to serve, they basically write a blank check that includes up to their final measure. And I think sometimes they see and experience stuff that it's really difficult for them to share. And hopefully the process, though, of talking about it, putting down that baggage. You know, Jeff said something about how he drank. I heard that a lot. A lot of self-medication or dealing with it. As John Roeder said, and we heard John earlier, says, you know, big boys don't cry. There's that mentality. So you don't talk about it. You just keep it to yourself. But he says when he finally let that go and started asking for help, things got a lot better.
And so are there lots of stories then of people who did go seek services from whoever could provide them, the VA or anybody else?
Oh, yeah. Jeff right here is getting some is getting his help from the VA. And a lot of, yeah, almost all the vets have. But there are also some other veterans who aren't having the struggle, and they're saying, yeah, they could get some services, but they don't want to take those services away from their brothers who really need it. Yeah. You know, they're not going to go to get that help. They're going to do it on themselves because they know their brothers in arms need more help than they do.
I got a question about the VA. I want to step back, though, because just in terms of the things that you learn and the things that you see, I mean, you are training for a job that doesn't exist in civilian society. You're being given a weapon and told, if need be, you're going to kill other human beings. This is not something that anybody takes lightly, but does it ever, do you think that the majority of folks in civilian society can really understand that, what that perspective will do to any human being, Andy?
I think the military trains us to actually know a broader amount of things. I think when we're coming back, the things that we do, there's some skills transfer that needs to happen. I think the biggest part of it is that when we get back to where we were, if we're gone 5 years, 2 years, a year, people where we came from are still the same people, but you've changed a lot. And it's the reintegration process. How do you reintegrate from a century back to the guy that's riding around being happy with everybody? Uh-huh. You've changed. And I think everyone who goes in the military has some of that. And that's where the camaraderie comes in. You know that if he's in the military, regardless of the branch, he understands about what you've gone through and what you're dealing with from then forward. It just doesn't stop when you discharge. Mm-hmm.
How long before either of you guys were back home did you, well, we talked about you were like 22 when you got out of the military, Jeff Tabler. I don't know, by 30, did you feel like everything had been put together? Was it sooner than that?
Well, yes, by 30, but a change in my life came years later to make me think more about the service and relive those days. Because I've discovered I was diagnosed over a year ago with Parkinson's. And they attribute it to Agent Orange, which I was around in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. The defoliant that was used.
Bad
chemical, yeah.
So now I have Parkinson's, and I'm dealing with that. And the VA has been very good to me and helped me a lot.
All right, so back to the VA then, because the segment that was on in the first hour before you guys was a discussion about this program to house veterans in Jackson County. They're trying to get all the homeless veterans housed by the end of the year, or at least have their situation identified and have services provided if they want those services. But one of the things that was mentioned in that conversation was the sense that there are some people who just don't want to have anything to do with the federal VA, don't want anything to do with the Department of Veterans Affairs. I mean, is that something that you hear a lot, either of you vets, or understand personally?
I've heard it. My brother-in-law dealt with the VA. He's back in Indiana. And it took him a couple of years before they could even help him financially because he developed cancer from Agent Orange. And so it took a long time. For me, it was quicker. But I have heard those stories where people are very upset with the Veterans Administration.
Not an atypical thing. Jeff LeBeau, you're nodding like, yeah.
Yeah, we had a couple. We had two vets who don't have positive feelings. Majority of, though, do. Majority of, say, despite all of the slowness and the hang-ups, they still really appreciate what the VA has done. But there's been a few that really very much just fed up with the whole thing. I'm, in fact, in preliminary conversations with a guy who's he wants nothing to do with anything, the country as a whole. He's chosen to be homeless. He's a Vietnam vet. Mm-hmm. And he's done with it all. Mm-hmm. And I would love to sit down and talk with him.
Are you going to be sharing My Story of Service series with other public TV outlets? Are there other places that are asking for it that might be? So, because we're talking basically the Medford-Ashland Klamath Falls area with this public TV operation.
Well, being Southern Oregon Public Television, being our, I kind of felt at the first step, I would love to archive all of these as a resource, the entire interviews. Like I said, some of them are over 2 hours, onto our website. So 20, 30 years from now, people could... I want to hear from the men and women on the ground during this war. But at this point, no, we haven't talked about sharing it with the system.
All right, so the next 8 Mondays at 8, starting tonight?
Next 16 okay. weeks.
16 weeks, and it's 9 o'clock on Monday nights on Southern Oregon Public TV. Jeff LeBeau is the program producer. Jeff Tabler, Army veteran. Andy Draper, Navy veteran and consulting producer. Thank you all for being here today on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
And that will do it for today's program. The person at the controls today is our associate producer, Soleil Rowan. The program is produced by Emily Curitan. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Join us next time, and please have a great day.